podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Hello, my friends of the Roast About Runner Roddy community. Apologies for taking so long between podcasts, but my website fell over this week, and I've spent all week on rebuilding Run Run Live. This is Chris, and hopefully this episode will find its way to you successfully. I'm probably going to move my podcast to another host sometime in the near future, so if you can't find it anymore, go to my website, runrunlive.com, and when I move it, I'll try to leave some clues out there, some breadcrumbs for you. So today, I'm going to insert an interview I did with Doug Durnford, Senior Product Manager of the Commercial Division for Precor, Inc., one of the big treadmill manufacturers. It's a great interview. He really knows his stuff, and I learned a bunch of stuff. So this continues in my Treadmillapalooza series. I've got a couple more. I've got one more interview with the Life Fitness folks in the can as well that I'll try to get up this week. I've been traveling a bunch, and I will continue to do so for my real job. That means my productivity for hobbies will go down a bit. So if you want to see my, by the way, if you want to see my Clark Kent persona, you can look me up as Christopher Russell on LinkedIn. You can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, etc. as C-Y-K-T Russell. That's Chris Yellow King Tom Russell. So let's hook up. However, I did manage to get most of my new ebook down on the plane last week. If my website hadn't croaked, I would have gotten it done this weekend. So stay tuned. It looks great. And I'm gonna see if I can push it through affiliate networks. So I'm going to try something new this time. And, you know, the adventure continues. My running was doing okay until Thursday night. And that's a long story. I'll get to. I did a lot of quality treadmill work and speed work leading up to Thanksgiving. And I turned in a pretty good performance since last we spoke on Thanksgiving morning. I ran 6:28 pace, 6:28 miles. It was Anthony's race, and they did really well. He got over 400 people to show up. It's like 100 people more than last year. And the irony of this, of course, is that if you run in Massachusetts, a 46-year-old running a 6:28 pace, I placed 44th out of just around 400 and change. 11th in my age class, so it shows you. I run to Massachusetts, you, a lot of quality runners show up. Then I had some business travel last week, so I didn't get a lot of quality in, and I actually missed some runs. Thursday night, I was out running with Anthony in the woods with the headlamps, or as they say over in the UK, head torches. I just love that visual. I just picture people running around with their hair on fire. And Anthony's broken his ankle, so he was riding his mountain bike. And I caught a toe just as I was approaching a falling log. So instead of leaping over it, I planted myself into it. And I tried to roll, but I just ended up torquing my shoulder because the log just didn't give. And so I heard something rip, and it was quite uncomfortable for a few minutes. Long story short, I think I tore something in my back. I think it's my latissimus dorsi. So I took a couple days off. Then I ran 4.5 miles this morning in the Mill Cities Relay, and the shoulder back was okay, but I was definitely running weird, and it didn't feel good at all. So I got to get back into shape, because marathon season is approaching fast, and I've got to lose some weight, work on my core. Anybody have good weight loss programs for high-mileage runners they want to share with me? I appreciate it. So, my friends, instead of my normal equipment tips today, I'm going to have some travel snippets for you from my various travels. So stay cool, and don't watch the news. It'll just make you crazy. Buck the negativity bubble. Stay focused, stay positive, stay happy, and you will be the leader that all these sheep will cleave to. So on with the show.
I hate you so much.
Come on, let's go. Emote. Come on, emote.
Destination running.
Hey, folks. This is your friend, Chris. Sorry for the noise here. Probably some wind here. I'm trying to cut it as best I can. But I'm about 5-6 miles out on the beach at Chatham Light. So go Google Earth Chatham, Mass, and look for the Chatham Light, and then follow the beach down about 5-6 miles. Hear that in the background? That's the mighty Atlantic. Got some big old breakers. And the sun just set. Sunset, and there's some clouds moving in. So this may be maybe the last time you hear from me. I got to run back now. I'm an hour out. Me and the Wonder Dog. The winter time, I figured they wouldn't give me a ticket for having the dog down here. And hopefully they don't worry too much about the 30-minute parking space I'm in. Although with the economy the way that it is, they may choose to find me. I can actually see the Chatham Light. There's actually a lighthouse over there. And it's rotating and flashing its light out. It's pretty cool. I don't see any ships out there. And like I said, the sun just now is sinking over the western horizon. I'm turning around. Good thing, got a nice tailwind to run back. I mean, it's like running on the moon. I got about 4 minutes out before I could let him off the leash. And after about 10 minutes, we saw our last human. I've been running for about an hour. And it's about 40-ish degrees. I got my sweater on. I was running into a stiff 20-mile-an-hour headwind, but there's always a headwind at the ocean, a westerly wind. I was running west, southwest, into the sun. Now I'm going to turn around, but, you know, I'm looking at an expansive beach here, maybe 100 feet wide, and it goes on for miles in both directions with the occasional, you know, derelict lobster trap, white sand, a couple of puddles of dug. Dog's smart. Dog's not going in the water. He's not drinking it either, so he's pretty smart. I would hate to have to carry him back. So I'm seeing the line of the beach here, and it's nothing. It's like the moon. There's some grass to my left, some sand dunes, and just my footprints and Buddy's footprints. And that, my friends, is peaceful. That's why I come down here. So I was down at my summer house, checking it out, getting it ready for the winter, clean out the gutters, make sure the heat's on, etc., etc., shut the water off, that sort of thing. And now I'm going to head back. I'll talk to you when I get back to the car. Ciao. Hey, my little friends there, me and the salty dog, Captain Canine. Our Captain Canine, you scurvy dog. He's in the truck with me here. We're back at the truck. That's a good thing. They didn't tow my truck. I figured I could park in the 30 minutes only for 2 hours because it's November 29th and they're not going to tow me. There's not a lot of people at the beach at 5 o'clock, 5:30 on a Saturday night here. But Buddy and I ran for 2 hours about down here at Chatham Light. It's kind of cool. I parked about 100 feet from the light itself. And I didn't realize, you know, I don't know what I was thinking, but I didn't realize it's an actual lighthouse. And I could actually see three lights, a buoy, two buoys, and in the Chatham Light itself, it's a working lighthouse. And so when I got out there, I hit the apex of my out and back. I ran down the beach, and I hit the furthest away, an hour out, just as the sun was setting. So, you know, that was kind of a poor calculation. But then I had to run back as it was getting darker and darker and darker. And right now it's, like, totally dark. And it's cloudy, too, with no moon. So it was kind of neat only being able to see the lighthouse, you know, the light from the lighthouse off in the distance as I was running back. It was sort of like my beacon of hope. Hope. I hope I can get back, is what I was thinking. All right, I should go that way. Maybe not. So anyhow, yeah, it was pretty cool. Got a little creepy, though, out there in the dark running on the beach. I mean, you can't get lost because you got the ocean on one side, you got the, you know, the dune on the other side. So it's not really, you can't really get lost. And Buddy was there, too. We were just following my footprints back. But it's still kind of creepy when it's dark and, you know, the all you can see, the waves, is the, you know, their big dark shapes crashing on your right. And it was cool, though. Pretty cool. And another cool thing was that it was low tide, And when I went out, it was low tide, and it was even lower tide when I was coming back, which is great, because I've been trapped before running down here, where I go out when the tide's coming in, and then I lose my beach on the way back, and I have to sort of pick myself through. And plus, the sand down by the ocean, the low tide sand, is nice and firm and typically a little flatter surface, so that's much better to run on. So if you're planning on running on the beach, try to do it low tide. Low tide is the best time, so then you can run on the hard bits of the sand. And I didn't see anything useful, you know, no doubloons or pirate ships or seals or anything. No wildlife whatsoever. A lot of broken shells and rocks. Of course, as is my tradition, I did pick one perfect beach stone out of the glacial pile to bring home with me as a talisman. But the, you know, this whole area of Cape Cod is used to be under a mile deep of glacier some 10,000-15,000 years ago. And the glacier left when it melted. It left this big pile of sand here, and it became Cape Cod and the islands. That's pretty cool. And so the sunset, though, the sunset's in the west, which isn't the beach side. So you get the sunrise over the water. The sunset's over Malibu Beach. So if you want to see the sunset, don't come to Cape Cod. Go to Malibu. I suggest Goldsmith's on the beach. Very nice restaurant. Get some great sushi. Maybe watch the game on TV. So I got about 2 hours in. Yeah, I don't know. I felt a little tired. I've been running all week. Just ran that 5K, which was interesting. I ran it really fast. Didn't feel great, but, I mean, when do I ever feel great? I ran it pretty fast, 6:28. That was good. Me and the Wonder Dog. The Wonder Dog is a great beach runner. He doesn't go into the ocean. He doesn't really know what to make of the ocean. He doesn't trust it. The little puddles, though, you know, the little pools that the ocean makes on the beach, he likes those. He'll run in those, but he won't drink the salt water. And I don't know how he ended up being so smart, but he doesn't drink the salt water, which is a bad thing. If they drink the salt water, it makes them nuts, and they start throwing up and stuff, so that's a good thing. And he stays right with me. You know, he goes and checks out the driftwood and anything that's sticking up out of the sand, he goes and checks out. But for the most part, he just stays with me, and we run on the beach, and he looks at me and says, what are you doing? What in the world are you doing? We have fun. And then he's in the truck now. What he does is he sits in my truck. I have a truck with the third seat. It's the extended cab, a little truck, a Chevy S10. And Buddy sits in the back, and he has his butt on the armrest right where my elbow is, and he sticks his head out the little sliding window in the back. So when people follow me, you know, they're looking at the dog, looking at them, the dopey dog with his head out the back. And, you know, I'll look at my rear view, and there'll be people smiling at me and waving and blowing kisses, and I'll, you know, it takes me a second to think that it's not me there. It's not me they're blowing kisses at. It's the dopey dog. So, all right, I'm going to go get me some batteries, clean the gutters, and go home. Bye.
And now for our featured interview.
All right, we're back, Doug.
Very good, Chris.
So, where are you? You're in...
I'm in Woodinville, Washington, beautiful northwest, where we probably won't see sun until March. Actually, I lie, because it's sunny today.
Is that because of the rain or because of the sun going down early, or both?
A little bit of both, but mainly... because it ends up raining between November and February, with maybe a few stints of where it stops, but it's usually overcast and gray.
Yeah, well, you know, I live in New England, so the problem we have is we don't get a whole lot of sun during the day now.
Right.
Yeah. So basically, about this time, maybe another half an hour, the sun will go down.
You bet.
So it's tough. It's like living in the Antarctic. But there's a lot of runners up there where you live, right? Pretty good fun. So anyhow, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Doug Durnford. I am the senior product manager for Precor. I oversee new product development for both cardio and strength products on the commercial end of things. So oversee commercial treadmill development, elliptical development, the new AMT adaptive motion trainer, as well as we've had a quite an emphasis on strength development this past year. Have two new lines of strength equipment that are coming to market. Well, one is just launched literally a week ago, and the other one will launch in January.
Is that where the market's going? Is the market going away from your, you know, traditional treadmills and bikes and stuff to more strength-based or exercise-based equipment?
No, that's just where Precor was. Precor has been is a dominant player in the commercial cardio environment. Precor acquired Icarion about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. A lot of the Icarion strength products were legacy products that were developed as long ago as 10 or 12 years ago. So they were in dire need of upgrading to the latest and greatest, if you will. We also developed a new line of strength that Icarion in a marketplace that Icarion was not in before. So this opened up a few more doors. That's primarily in the hospitality market, the hotel, motel market, apartment complexes, that type of thing. So
right.
little smaller, more space efficient, very value price, and very, very easy to use.
So commercial market Precor that you're working in is the same sort of market, right? The clubs and the
that's
and
correct.
The hospitality and all that. Yep,
I've run on
a lot of your machines. So one of the things, treadmills are treadmills to me. You know, I can't tell you by brand, but I can tell you, you know, I'm a big guy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the time of day, I might be close to pounds. And ironically enough, I also am a pretty fast runner.
Yeah.
So when you get my 200 pounds doing 10 miles an hour, it tends to rock the treadmill.
Right.
And you really feel the ones that are heavy and the
yeah.
ones that aren't so heavy, and you really feel the ones that have a stiff bed and a thin belt versus the ones that have a thick bed and a squishy belt, you know?
Sure.
So I guess I'm more likely to bring out the flaws in a treadmill than other people, right?
Yeah, you bet.
I'm probably a fringe in that case. I'm probably not the design parameter.
Yeah. Well, actually, to a certain extent, you are. In the case of treadmills, if you think of how a treadmill gets used, you've got, you know, you're hitting that treadmill with about 2.5 times your body weight if you're a smooth runner, and if you're a runner that moves their center of gravity up and down quite a bit and really hits the ground hard, you could be hitting it at 3 to 3.5 times your body weight. So when you design a treadmill, actually more for worst-case scenario than you do for the average person,
right.
especially on a commercial treadmill. And even on the better consumer treadmills, you want to design that actually with the heavier person in mind, because you obviously don't want it to fail under that circumstance.
Yeah, and, you know, besides the treadmill moving around a lot, sometimes I will find that I cause them to slip, you know, the belts to either slip or the engines to choke on them.
Yes.
The motors to choke on them because
yep.
of the speed and the size. And those are probably the ones that are a little less, you know, they're either older or they're out of tune. Or, I mean, you tell me, what causes...
Yeah, Chris, that's a great segue. That's one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about, and that is motor horsepower. If you go online and look at a whole bunch of different specs on treadmills, you'll see a motor horsepower. That horsepower is, to a large extent, irrelevant if you've got a big motor and a 10-cent motor controller on there. It's the motor. It's that combination of horsepower in the motor and controller that really dictates how well it runs and how good it feels underfoot. A lot of treadmills might advertise a 3 or 4 horsepower motor, but they have a very cheap controller, which means that it's very slow to react to those peak impact forces that you have when your foot hits the treadmill belt. And that's where you feel, if you have a cheap controller on there, it can't react fast enough. You'll feel it lag, you'll feel it stall, and over time, especially in motors, DC drive motors, that hesitation will only get worse over time. And the only way to make that better is to replace the commutator brushes within the motor so that it can react a little bit better. There's a real good test that you can do when you're checking out treadmills, and that is simply walk on a treadmill at a relatively slow speed, anywhere between 1 and 2 miles per hour, grasp the handrail, and put all your weight or stomp your foot down and try and stop the treadmill belt. And if there's little or no hesitation in the treadmill belt and it drives through that kind of resistance, then you know you have a pretty good controller and motor horsepower enough to satisfy you. A lot of the cheaper ones, a lot of the lower cost ones that have the cheap controller, you'll be able to stop that treadmill belt dead, even hold it to the you know, long enough, 3 or 4 seconds, where it will actually trip a breaker and, you know, shut it down.
Yeah, and I've done that on treadmills before. I've actually tripped the breaker, which isn't any fun if you're running 10 miles an hour, because it stops. It
That's
doesn't
correct.
Slow down gracefully.
That's
so
correct.
You end up slamming into the treadmill. Yeah, so that's interesting. So what's the controller do? What's it? Is it like a flywheel, or is it a clutch, or what is it?
The controller actually sends the signal to the motor that actually tells it how fast it needs to spin to generate a certain speed. It also has a speed feedback loop that basically says, okay, if you want to go 6 miles per hour and I read that you're only going five or 5.5 miles an hour, then it's going to draw more current to add more torque to try and get that motor speed back up to where it needs to be. A cheap controller, that motor feedback loop will be very slow, and therefore your lag in the belt will be noticeably longer than others. In the case of Precor treadmills, we use both what's called a DC drive motor and an AC drive motor. We only use AC drive motors in our commercial treadmills. The advantage of an AC drive motor is that it doesn't have any motor brushes in them to wear down over time. Motor control is much stiffer, which means you basically, if the motor controller tells it to spin such that it gives you 6 miles an hour, it has no choice but to spin at 6 miles per hour. And the torque, or the amount of torque that it can produce and deliver to the belt, is such that it will accommodate, for example, our motor controller and AC motor. If you put a 200-pound person on there, you can have a 200-pound person running all the way up to 12 miles an hour without a decrease in speed or performance.
Oh, that's good.
In fact, you can have a 240-pound person running at 12 miles per hour without a decrement in the speed.
Right.
DC motors have much more difficulty in doing that. They don't have as high a torque ratio, especially the torque to voltage ratio, to deliver that. So it will tend to want to lag with a heavier runner at a faster speed.
So is the controller a electronic feedback,
yes,
or is that a mechanical feedback?
No, it's an electronic circuit that basically talks both with the upper console and whatever the console tells that controller. For example, I want to go 6 miles an hour, then it will deliver that signal to the motor in such a fashion, and there's different motor control architectures or software control that tells that motor how it needs to operate to deliver that 6 miles an hour, as an example.
Interesting. So it's basically a function of the motor.
Yes.
As well. Right.
Yeah. Understand also that typically your treadmill will be plugged into a 110 volt. You know, our commercial treadmills, we require a 20 amp dedicated circuit, but oftentimes, you know, your consumer treadmills will be plugged into a normal 15 amp circuit.
Right.
Well, understand, simple electronics say that the most horsepower you can drive from that circuit is 110 volts times 15 amps divided by 746. And that is how many horsepower, and you'll find that comes out to about 2.1 or 2.2 horsepower. So even if a manufacturer advertises a 4 horsepower motor, it'll never use 4 horsepower.
Oh, that's interesting, because it's constrained by the power in the
coming from the wall.
Yeah, this is all coming back to me. I'm remembering some of my electronics.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So would you say, you know, if I'm Joe treadmill buying public here, Mr. Runner, one of the most important things to look for is that, you know, is that motor type and that sort of thing? Would that be the top thing on your list?
Yeah, motor type But there's really, if you, the best way is to get on the treadmill and do that torque test that I mentioned. Walk 1 to 2 miles per hour, and then put all your weight against the belt to see if the belt stops. If the belt stops, then you know you have a pretty cheap motor and motor control system. If there's no hesitation, if it just drives through that amount of force and so on, then you know that you have a very strong system.
All right, good.
If you can't get on a treadmill, then my recommendation there is don't buy a treadmill under $1,500. Because yep. I guarantee you that the controller on there will be, the actual motor controller, the electronics cost more than the motor itself. The difference in cost between a 2-horsepower DC motor and a 4-horsepower or 3-horsepower motor is maybe $10 to $18. But you can have controllers that cost $50 or motor controllers that cost $250. Huh. And obviously the $50 controller is going to be extremely limited in what it can do, how fast it can react to those peak impact forces and so on.
So is this also the thing that controls, like if I'm, you know, let's say I'm jogging along at a 6-mile-an-hour pace and I press the button to get it up to a 10-mile-an-hour pace and it takes, you know, 20 to 30 seconds to get there? Is that the controller too?
That is the controller, but it's not limited by the motor itself and so on. That's all a software control, and the rate of increase of the treadmill actually is probably more defined by safety regulations. There are certain safety regulations that we must follow if we want to be, for example, ASTM compliant, or in Europe there's an EN957 compliance and so on. It's more for safety of the user that you don't ramp up too quickly. I know that pure runners and so on would love to be able to override that, especially if they're doing intervals and things
right.
like that, but it's just not that safe for the general public.
Yeah, the ramp down on the backside is the same thing, right? You're finishing up an interval, and you have to wait out the 20 seconds to get down to your recovery speed.
That is correct. That is correct, and that is, you know, even a lot of interval programs are such that you can selectively choose the speed for the exercise portion and choose the speed for the rest portion, and then the time for that rest interval and the time for the exercise interval. And if you're not expecting, or if you are concentrating on something else and you don't realize that you're going from an exercise to a rest, you could run right through the, you know, the front of the treadmill, because if the speed came down too quickly. So it is that is more dictated, at least definitely on the pre-core treadmills, the rate of increase and the rate of decrease is more defined by a safety regulation.
So you were talking to me before about a new product that was active exercise or active something. What was that?
It's called an adaptive motion trainer.
What does that do?
It's basically what it is a dynamic variable stride elliptical machine. So you get on this machine and you get started, and basically it'd be like if you're running on a track, and if you wanted to run faster, what would happen? Your cadence, your stride rate would increase, and your
yep.
stride length would increase.
Yep.
That's what this AMT does. So if you wanted to go faster on the AMT, you put more force into it, just like you would on a track to run faster, and what happens is automatically the stride length gets longer, up to a certain max stride length. It's 28 inches on the AMT, as your stride rate also increases. The advantage of that is on fixed stride elliptical machines, you are tied into, you know, a pretty short stride length. On average in the industry, it's about 18 and a half inches. On the AMT, you get an extra 10 inches of stride length on that motion.
Oh, that's good, because it gives you more of a range of motion. It's probably a better exercise for taller people.
Exactly. If you walk into a club and you look at their fixed stride ellipticals, you'll very rarely see a tall person on those ellipticals. see a lot of women on them and shorter people, but once the taller people on there, get on there, the fixed stride length is so choppy that it doesn't feel comfortable, and the AMT addresses that issue.
Hey, you know, one of the things I always wondered, since you set up the consoles on these things, why does it ask me my weight? What does it do with that information?
To more accurately calculate calories, you need to have the weight of the person on there.
Okay.
The American College of Sports Medicine, in their metabolic equations, the more accurate ones use a weight factor in there. You know, for example, for a 200-pound person to run 6 miles an hour, it takes more calories than a 150-pound person running at 6 miles an hour. More
Right.
work effort, and therefore you should be, you should get credit for that.
Yeah, I always wondered that because I figured that's what it was doing. It was using it to calculate the calories burned. Yeah.
If it doesn't ask you weight, then it's going to use an averaged weight.
Okay, because I was always worried that it was doing something with the belt tensioner or something on the treadmill itself to adjust for my weight, you know?
No,
but
no.
If it's just calculating the calories, I can ignore that and go for my run.
Right.
So it takes a while to push the button to get up from 150 to 195.
Right.
So, all right, that's good information. So what's coming? What's new? What's the new stuff? What's the innovative stuff going on in your world as a product manager?
Well, again, the adaptive motion trainer, we came out with that in 2007. That's one of the newer innovations that's on the market from a cardio standpoint and so on. You know, like you said, a treadmill is a treadmill, but what can we do with a treadmill to make it even better? And so we're looking at some of the things there, primarily related to longevity. A treadmill is still, at least in a health club, is from a revenue standpoint, it's number one in the industry. From a unit standpoint, it's a close second behind an elliptical, the elliptical machines. But they're still, you know, ellipticals and treadmills in a health club still represent probably 70% of the floor space, of the cardio floor space, those two machines.
Yeah.
So how can you make a treadmill better? And one of the ways is to come up with a new design of a belt and deck system such that you get much better longevity on the belt and the deck. Obviously, those are wear item parts. When your foot hits plants against the belt, you got friction between the belt and the deck, and that friction is what wears out the belt and the deck. And so if there's some type of system that provides you with a better way to do that, gives you a longer life between the belt and the deck, that's something that we're looking at. Also, any advances in terms of shock absorption. Ideally, it'd be nice to have a shock absorption that you can actually dial in to how you want it to feel. And that's a little bit tricky, but that's something that we're looking at. From a shock absorption standpoint, the important thing to remember and the important thing for your runners to remember, look for treadmills that have a nice amount of shock absorption where the foot plants against the belt, but where it pushes off near the rear of the belt,
yeah,
that deck needs to be fixed. So in other words, there's no horizontal movement in the deck. There's just
Right.
a vertical movement up and down near the front of the treadmill, but it's fixed at the rear so that you're not pushing off a surface that can slide back away from you.
Okay.
Okay, so shock absorption at the front and fixed at the rear is something that you want to look at there. Your runner should also look at what I call the true running distance of any treadmill, and that's not measured by what the specs say in the brochure. If it says it's a 60-inch long belt, typically that's measured from the front of the hood cover to either the end of the deck, the top of the roller, or the end of the roller, and you don't really know which one unless you get a ruler out and measure it. But the true effective running distance of any treadmill, you actually measure from where the handrail is situated relative to the belt. So if you drop a plumb bob from the front of the handrail to where it touches the belt and measure
Yep.
from that point to the end of the deck, that's your true effective running length of any treadmill, and you'll be comparing apples to apples on that.
All right, great. Well, hey, Doug, we're running up against our time limit here, so I'm going to have to let you go. Anything brief you want to add?
Nope, just that if your runners are looking for a treadmill that will last them their lifetime, the Precor 946 or 932, which is our standard commercial or our lighter commercial treadmill. It is a commercial treadmill. It does have the AC drive, which means that your motor is never gonna fail on that guy, and you're gonna have the best feel underfoot. But it's in a smaller footprint than the huge commercial treadmills and so on. That's gonna give you the best feel of any smaller sized treadmill on the market.
And where do people find your stuff?
They can go, online at www.precor.com and go to, we have a dealer locator directly on that website, and they can find a local dealer that carries those treadmills.
All right, man. Thank you for the great information. I appreciate it.
Very good, Chris. Thanks for your time.
All right. Bye-bye.
I know.
Here's today's quick tips.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm out here in San Francisco. Actually, not in San Francisco. I'm down by the airport, which is Burlingame. I'm running along the bay here in the morning, looking out on the bay, and can't see anything. You can see about 50 feet because you got that fog that rolls in every morning. In Boston, this would be an abnormal day. In San Francisco, this is just like every other day. And they got those otter things out there swimming around. There's a bunch of those otters swimming around, checking me out. A bunch of ducks, too. I guess they think I'm going to throw them food. I'm out on a little dock here, sitting on a dock of the bay. Actually, I'm standing on a dock of the bay. But that's pretty cool. Going for a little run in the fog here. If I could see, I'd be looking at the airport across the bay here and the mountains on the other side. It's beautiful weather last night. Different than Boston, that's for sure. There's got to be like 10 of those little beaver things out here. I think they expect me to throw food. I'm not going to throw food. People must come down and feed these animals. So, yeah, I'm out running in my shorts and my T-shirt and having some fun. Didn't get a run in yesterday, but I'm going to take the red eye back tonight. We'll see if I can get a sloppy workout in tomorrow. Maybe run with the club in the afternoon. Worked on my new ebook on the plane. I got a lot of work done there. Now I got to go visit a couple more customers, and I'll be off to the races. So I found a great solution for stinky shirts. So this is kind of funny. So I discovered another stinky shirt. I get these shirts that get some sort of bacteria living in them, and they just, no matter how much you wash them, they smell horrible. They're just like, you smell like an old goat. As soon as you put them on, they start to, they fire up like an old goat. So I took my wife's suggestion, and I soaked it in a mixture of vinegar and water for like 3 days, and it seems to have eliminated the old goat stink. Smell kind of like a pickle now, but that's a key find if that actually eliminates the stink. We'll see if it stands up to testing, but a little vinegar for 99 cents a bottle. You mix it with water in a big container, big bucket. Stick your shirt in there, let it soak for 2-3 days. You smell a little bit like a pickle, but, you don't smell like an old goat. So I think I might have been able to bring that one back from the dead. We'll see. Hey, we'll see you out there.
Okay, folks, that's episode 44 in the can. I hope you have a great week, and I hope you get your winter running in, and I certainly hope you find all this treadmill talk helpful. One of the things I heard is that you can buy the commercial club treadmills used, and that they're pretty good. One of my friends said that, but I'll be traveling this week. I hope to get out the Life Fitness podcast at the end of this week, and I have someone from Zappos Shoes lined up. So maybe we'll be talking to them, as well as a couple of my serious running buddies who have those expensive treadmills in their house to give us the real scoop, as it were. So I'll leave you with some great tunes, a nice little acoustic number by Justin Gordon called Winter in Ohio. And as always, all the music on the Run, Run, Live podcast is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Have a great week, and I will see you out there.
Oh. time to leave town, but I'm frozen to the ground. Good night, mother. Good night, brother.
Listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.